My job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Welcome to the Black Girls Heal podcast, where we talk about healing our intimacy disorders, unresolved trauma, and building a healthy relationship with first ourselves and then others. Every episode, we will talk about advice you can apply today to break unhealthy patterns and grow in your self-worth. I'm Sheena Lachey, love addiction coach and trauma specialist. Let's begin. Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Black Girls Heal. I hope that you are having a wonderful day, that you're shining, that you're thriving, and that you are living your best life today. And I hope that this podcast episode helps you get a little bit closer to the life that you want and that you desire. So today's episode, we are talking about the impact of childhood emotional neglect and how it leads to the behaviors of love addiction. So childhood emotional neglect is a type of childhood trauma. It is the type of trauma that I see in 100% of the people that I serve. No matter whether or not you are connected to love addiction, love avoidance, if you just have low self-esteem, anxiety, depression that is caused by the traumas that you have gone through, all the common denominator across the board is childhood emotional neglect. And it is so important to know what this is, because I think what trips up a lot of people when it comes to breaking down the root causes of why they may have repeated relationship issues and struggles with low self-esteem, and they're doing all the right things and nothing is really adding up, nothing is really changing. Maybe they look back at their life and they think, I have parents that sacrificed for me. Maybe they were immigrants and they came here. Maybe they just went through struggle. Maybe they were always successful, but they just worked really hard and they were physically present and gave me everything I wanted. Why do I feel this way? Why do I continue to have these types of self-doubts? Why do I keep being attracted to or attracting certain types of partners? No, change that. Why do I keep being attracted to versus attracting? I really want to work on my language and amend what I've said in previous years, that we are attracting certain types of people, because I really want y'all to know that there is always, always, always people who are available for you to love and who want to love you around you. However, when we are used to the foolishness, when trauma and drama has been normalized, that's the stuff that's on our radar. And so when we have healthy and available people, we don't even see them. And if we do see them, we feel uncomfortable. It feels like it's a little bit too much. We're not as interested. And so just our barometer is more, and that might not be the right word, but we are more tuned into people who live in that state of dysfunction, not because it's what we want or what we actually are looking for, but it's just what's familiar to us. And just as humans, we always search for what is familiar, even if it causes problems, even if it causes drama. The body wants what it is comfortable with. It wants a sense of homeostasis. And until we actively unlearn those patterns and until we actively heal these things and replace it with different things, what is common and what is normal for my body, what my body knows is how to deal with up and down fights. What my body knows is how to deal with roller coaster emotions. What my body knows is how to deal with people who are in and out, because I've been dealing with that my whole life. Yeah, it causes stress, but it's familiar. So that's where our work comes into play. But I think it really trips up people who feel like, I have no reason to feel this way when you look back at it. But childhood emotional neglect is the common denominator. So we are going to talk about that in this episode. We're going to talk about how and why it leads to love addictive behaviors.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
With summer winding down and fall almost being here, it's time to think about getting our cozy self-care rituals on point. The Everything Shower is a core staple with Osea's new Undaria Algae Body Wash and is a must-have addition to your routine. The Undaria Algae Body Wash infuses your shower with the healing power of the sea with this all-natural, uplifting, citrusy scent. This pH balanced and hydrating formula doesn't strip the skin, leaving it feeling soft and renewed. I love how this body wash has such a smooth gel-like texture. It lathers so easily and leaves me feeling fresh and yummy. And its natural plant-based ingredients help support the skin's moisture barrier and cleanse without stripping, which is perfect for this time of year. With Osea being clean, vegan,
cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Create your shower with clean, vegan face and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code BGH at OseaMalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to OseaMalibu.com and use code BGH for 10% off. This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. In a world where you do not know what you're getting, finding someone you can be authentic with and who leads in being their real self is so important. And when you're dating, it's even more important that you meet people who aren't into wearing a mask and are just as serious about meeting their person through genuineness and clarity. And that's why I love eHarmony's detailed compatibility quiz to help you see upfront if they are a great fit for your values, your lifestyle, and your commitment level versus having to wait months in to figure all of that out. eHarmony is all about helping you find someone you can be yourself with. We all want to be seen, heard, and understood. And that's why so many more people are turning to eHarmony. I'd love for you to give eHarmony a shot. Get started with their compatibility quiz for free so you can find someone you can be yourself with. eHarmony, get who gets you.
Okay, so for us to get started, let's go ahead and break down these terms. We're going to break down emotional neglect, childhood emotional neglect, and we're also going to break down what is love addiction in case there are any newbies who are joining us here today. So childhood emotional neglect is a type of trauma that happens when we are younger, and it is not about the things that happened, it's about the things that didn't happen. And so usually when people hear the term neglect, especially if you come from what you believe and what you've been told and what society tells us is the perfect home, the type of home where you do not have a right to feel the way that you feel, right? You had either one very dedicated parent or two very dedicated parents and aunties, uncles or whatever. Maybe you financially were secure and safe. Maybe your parents were physically available and came to games and did all this stuff with you. And so y'all had a lot of family time together. And so you're like in your head, you're like, I was never neglected. I had all of the attention and love and support that I needed. So why do I feel empty this way? Why do I feel this ache on the inside of me? What is it that I am not getting an understanding? And so it makes you feel like you are being selfish, that you're being ungrateful, that you're betraying your parents for feeling this way or the people who raised you for feeling this way. And it creates a whole lot of confusion and self-resentment and self-blaming, and then you feel even worse. So it's a very vicious cycle. But emotional neglect, childhood emotional neglect, is not about the things that happened, it's about the things that didn't happen. Every time that you emotionally needed to be seen, valued, and honored as another human being, as a soul, every time you needed to be comforted and held and loved just for being you. So sometimes in these households that are supposedly perfect and you had everything you needed, so there's no reason for you to feel this way, where the emotional neglect comes in at can look like maybe there was some love and affirmation, but it was only when you did the things that they wanted you to do. You had to earn that approval that they showed you with their attention or their disconnection when you had disappointed them. And more than just they want good for you, but just kind of like disgust. Like, would they ever look at you in disgust when you made a mistake? Would they stonewall and shut down when you did something that to them was unsavory? Did they ever withhold attention and time from you to teach you a lesson? Were they super critical? And so when the praise came, it was hard won and far in between and sporadic. Did you have parents who were physically present, but they were so consumed with their own work, with their own addictions, with each other, with their own affairs, with their own depression, that they may have been physically there, but they weren't mentally and emotionally there? So all of the care and love and support that you needed as a child, they were not able to provide. And so one of the things that happens as a young child, when you're watching this and your parents and your family are your world, is a child goes through all the reasons why they must be the problem or how to fix the problem. And so how do I make mommy happy? How do I make daddy happy? How do I make myself smaller? How do I become the perfect daughter? How do I become the perfect big sister or little sister? How do I become the clown of the family? And you do all this stuff to try to make things better. And one, as a child, it was never your responsibility to try to fix them, but you don't know that. And you start to believe that it is your your responsibility to fix people. You start to believe that this is part of your ownership to make sure everything goes well. And you start to learn that for you to go along, to get along in the family, you have to minimize some of these needs. So let me go back a moment. So let's say family members are unavailable, either because maybe they've gone through their own trauma. Maybe they were physically, sexually abused or emotionally abused. And so maybe that's not happening with them towards you, but it has prohibited access within themselves of how they know how to be caring and loving. So they don't really know softness. They don't really know tenderness. I hear that from my students all the time. You know, they've been through a lot, so I understand why they aren't able to do that. So are you trying to be understanding and you trying to be graceful and you trying to give compassion, what you've done in order for you to exalt them and to empathize with them, you have demoted yourself. You've demoted what you actually need emotionally. You've demoted what actually is important to you. It's okay. I know that I really needed a hug, or I know that I really needed to spend some time with them, but they're going through a lot, or it was really hard for them. You know, they had just gotten to the country, so they really didn't have time and space to focus on me, or they had just gone through a divorce, or insert whatever thing was happening, which may have been a real reason, but you make excuses to why what you needed emotionally was just more of a burden and why it made sense that you weren't attended to. And what I need you to know is no matter what was going on in the house, no matter what was not going on in the house, you as a child, you needed to have all of that emotional care and love for you to feel whole and complete and secure. What our parents give us is not just access to food, shelter, water, clothing. They also help instill where our safety comes from. They teach us how and where to be rooted and how and where to be planted. And if I grow up in a house where I am not emotionally safe to be myself, to cry, to be angry, to have a voice, to have an opinion, to make mistakes, I live my life with my feet always in hot potato. Like I can never actually put my feet on the ground because I always have to stay ready. And so emotional neglect doesn't teach you how to build these emotional resources within yourself. It doesn't teach you that it's okay to have emotional needs and then also that someone's going to attend to them, that you have to learn how to deal with them yourself or just neglect them altogether and just become what other people need you and want you to be in that moment. And this sense of emotional repression is the perfect backdrop that leads into love addictive behavior. So love addiction is a type of intimacy disorder that is based in the persistent obsession of a person, a relationship, or the fantasy of a person or relationship who you want them to be, and mistaking that intense connection or that intense obsessive connection to them for love. Because I feel this strongly, it must be love. They must be my person. And yeah, we go through things and yeah, things aren't perfect, but I wouldn't feel this way if it really wasn't true love and connection. But actually, it is trauma. And the reason why it is trauma is, one, going back to what I was saying at the beginning, if the type of relationship that we're in is dangerous to us emotionally, mentally, spiritually, financially, sexually, and we still are trying to stay there and make it work. And I said dangerous, y'all. Not inconvenient, not uncomfortable sometimes. You know, relationships have their ups and downs. But if something is dangerous to us in those ways, and danger does not have to look like someone is knocking you upside the head. Danger looks like you feeling low about yourself, causing stress in your body, feeling depressed, feeling anxious, you being caught in the middle of love triangles and being tossed and used by other people. When you are a child of emotional neglect, your threshold for what danger looks like and what is unhealthy for you is so low. We talk about the bar being in hell. When you experience childhood emotional neglect, you really don't really have a baseline of what the actual bare minimum standard is. There really is no bare minimum standard, which is why sometimes you can tell people what's happening in your relationship if you're still telling people, because a lot of times love addicts will try to live in secret about what's going on because they feel shame. Because when you tell your friend or family member, they look at you and they're like, what's happening? And you feel like, oh, here you go. You know, you can't tell everybody everything. They're being judgmental and they don't understand. You know, there are circumstances here. They don't know her. They don't know him. And you make all these justifications in your head, but it's because you don't understand what is emotionally, mentally, spiritually, sexually, financially dangerous. But other people who are outside of that, who aren't caught in this traumatic cycle, they see it and they care for you and they love you. And as a love addict, again, as a person who is a victim of childhood emotional neglect, you've spent your whole life demoting yourself to promote other people. And so even if you do see that this is uncomfortable or bad for you, you will sacrifice yourself to be there for somebody else even when it is tearing you down from the inside out. And so these love addictive relationships are the perfect band-aid for those who've gone through childhood emotional neglect, because you've been repressing your emotional needs. They haven't gone anywhere. No matter how much you try to harden yourself, and no matter how much you try to outprove and out-earn or out-succeed, whatever your underlying negative core beliefs are, they don't go anywhere. They're there until we work through them. They are there until we actually handle them. And just acknowledging that they're there. I hear a lot of people before we start working together say things like, yeah, I've been through some things, but I'm working on it. And I'm like, how are you working on it? Well, you know, I'm just trying to be mindful. You know, I'm just trying to like keep my boundaries. I'm like, girl, that doesn't mean anything. You trying to be mindful about what's going on without actually, one, getting to the root of what's happening. Two, looking at what are your thoughts around it. Three, figuring out what your patterns are around why you've been doing what you've been doing. Four, replacing those patterns with different actions and behaviors. Five, hitting the roadblocks of what happens when you try to replace it on your own, or when you try to replace it with help and getting stuck and then asking for help to get unstuck. Six, dealing with the shame and embarrassment that happens when you realize that your smartness and your type A-ness and your perfectionism cannot outdo your trauma response, and still practicing self-love on the other side of it. Like, there are so many layers to working through this, y'all. And we get so caught up and we get stuck and we feel shame around it because we are not realizing how deep this stuff goes. That this stuff takes active, deliberate work, help, and support to unlearn it and to work through it. It takes an active choosing of yourself. It takes an active choosing to ask for help. It takes an active stepping out and allowing other people to see you in this process. Love addiction is an intimacy disorder. You do not solve a fear of intimacy, a fear of being seen, a fear of being loved, a fear that if someone actually saw me and got to know me by yourself. That is just reinforcing those fears that it's only safe for me to do this on my own because other people don't want to see all my mess. Other people, it's just going to burn in them. They're going to think this is too much. That is literally your wound. Your wound that believes you're so much and too much and people don't have time for you. So you're going to work through this on your own because you feel like people don't have time for you and people aren't going to understand you. You know, like it's the snake eating its own tail. And so the first step is getting out of this by asking for support and help and letting yourself not have to have all the answers. And that's for those of us where our trauma has, we have to be perfect in order to be loved. I know that's not everybody. I know some people, they get to the extreme that they go into is the self-deprecation and the self-loathing and feeling like you're never going to be good enough. And other people go to the other extreme of like, I have to always be good enough. So anyways, going back to how childhood emotional neglect really leads to love addictive behaviors is because you haven't had that emotional care and nurturance and concern and love just because growing up and is still in need. When you find a relationship with someone who is giving you that emotional care and love, or at least crumbs of it, or a semblance of it, you're like, great, awesome. This is it, because you've never really had the good stuff before. It makes me kind of think of how sometimes you'll see on social media, Instagram, TikTok, whatever, parents who are taking their 3-4-year-olds on dates. So maybe a father taking their little girl out on a date, or treating them to a certain standard because they want their child to know growing up that this is just like baseline. Like, this should be what you're getting no matter what. So if anyone tries to come to you with some McDonald's or some Chick-fil-A and acting as if they have hung the moon for you, that you can be like, yo, are you serious? Because your tastes have been refined in this way. And so if you emotionally have been starved, if you emotionally have been deprived, and someone starts to send you good morning texts every day, you're like, oh, wow, this is something special. If you have been told that your feelings and emotions are too much, and you have a date that's 3 or 4 hours, and they listen to your life story, you're like, oh, wow, they really understand me. When really, your friends and family members should be holding space for you like this all the time. Like, this is not anything special that they're giving you, but you've never had it, so it is special for you. When you have someone who wants to spend lots of time around you or with you, when you have been ignored and overlooked or scapegoated your whole life, or maybe you grew up in a family where there were 2 people physically present in the home, but they were so caught up with work or caught up with their own mental illness or caught up with their addiction, and you have someone who's always available with time, you've never had that before, right? You never had that level of attention. So now this must be it. I have someone who finally gets me. No, girl, a lot of times you have someone who doesn't have anything going on in their own life. So
they spend their time with you. You know, like, it's hard for you to see with clear eyes what's going on.
And one more, just because I know that it's common. If you grew up without having really any access to physical affection and support, so maybe there weren't a lot of hugs. Maybe there wasn't, or at least maybe not enough, and definitely not any that didn't have with strings attached. When you get into a relationship with someone, or let me say it this way, that same family situation, but even as you've grown up as an adult, you don't really have hugs from friends. You don't really have any cuddle time. You don't have any semblance of continual, consistent physical affection. You've taught yourself that you really don't need it, that it's weird, that you're not really a physical touch person. And then you get into a relationship, and let's say you are someone who's secretly a physical touch person, but you just never had access to it. When you get into a relationship with someone who gives that to you, the truth that you never allowed yourself to say out loud, or that you didn't even know was true, those needs are being met through this physical, sexual, intimate relationship with this person. And so you need it. You crave, you miss those moments of being cuddled up on the couch or in bed with someone, because that has been a source of affection for you. And maybe continuing on, the only times that you actually have access to physical support and love is in intimate relationships. And so that could fuel your need to be a serial monogamer, your need to consistently be out on dates, your need to have all this, because you just want to be held and you just want to be touched. And you don't know how to, you don't want to ask your healthy friends, you don't want to ask your community around you, and be that vulnerable and say, I just need a hug today, right? Because you're so used to doing it on your own. And don't get lost in the weeds here, because I know and I hear that there are some people saying, well, what if you don't have any friends? Or what if, you know, all the what if situations. Take the underlying message of what I'm saying, which is you have been in deprivation from an unmet need. And so you've been using the replacement, or you've been using these unhealthy connections to other people who've been giving you pieces of that, and you've been settling for it. And so that's why you've been staying there.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Let's take a quick break to say thanks to this week's sponsors.
So there's an assignment that we have in the recovery school that's called Who's Your Daddy? Which is one of my favorite assignments. And, you know, I did it at the retreat. Each of the retreats, I curate the curriculum based on what the attendees want to learn about and talk about. And so at retreat, they wanted to talk about dating. So we did the Who's Your Daddy exercise. And so this exercise basically helps you see, okay, what are the patterns that I've been recreating? Who have I been dating? What are the invisible things that I have been trying to look for? And what have I been hoping to get from this? And how do I start this process of starting to give it to myself? And it's only by the awareness of this stuff that we can actually start to break the patterns. It's not about shaming ourselves and guilting ourselves. I really, really hope that if you're in this process where you're just starting and you're coming to a place where, like, I'm tired of being sick and tired, and you're feeling a lot of regret, you have done the best you've known how with the information that you've had. And that may go one ear and out the other. I know sometimes it does for me, or it has for me in the past, but it's true. You didn't know what you didn't know, and you're still learning. So how can you fault yourself for not being prepared with what is the base minimum standard? How can you fault yourself for you as a little girl just existing in your family unit, just existing and not being attended to and loved? That wasn't your job, to try to teach other people how to love you and don't forget me and remember me and hug me and love me. That was your birthright. You've always deserved that. And so you have not done anything wrong, my dear. And I want you to start to practice some self-forgiveness in that area. And knowing that as long as you start to show up for yourself and make these active changes, then your story is not over. You can change where this narrative is going at any time. So I hope this helped. I hope this starts to put words to why and where emotional childhood neglect may have been affecting you and leading you to these band-aid relationships. Some of you may have learned about childhood emotional neglect for the first time today. There is a book, it was called Running on Empty by Dr. Jonas Webb, that talks about emotional neglect. So she doesn't really talk as much as about what to do with it. I mean, she gives some things about it, but I think she does the best job of breaking down what it looks like and really validating your experience so that you know that it's not just you. So that would be a great resource for you. as far as those of you who are like, okay, this totally makes sense and I'm ready to break this pattern, all those steps that I talked about, realizing what it is, naming it, saying that you're ready for change, then also learning how to replace those behaviors, learning skills and tools to start to retrain how you talk to yourself, when you talk to yourself, to learn how to give yourself that nurturance and care and concern, starting the process, then getting distracted, starting the process and then hitting walls, learning how to reach out for help, learning how to practice self-compassion that you can't do this all on your own, learning how to really go deep in this self-acceptance work so that you can be that shining beacon where this is now your new base standard and you bring that new level of self-acceptance, self-love, self-knowledge into all these relationships. You know, I was talking to someone actually yesterday, one of my current students, and she was telling me, she's like, I don't know why this keeps happening. She's just kind of getting started in this process and going through some of the family lessons. And she's like, I love myself. I think I'm amazing. I think I'm beautiful. I think I'm successful. And while she's talking, I feel this sense of sadness. She's saying it to me with big eyes and a big smile. But I told her after she was done, I was like, okay, so how are you feeling right now? She started to tell me what she was thinking. I was like, no, how do you feel right now? And so then she told me some positive feelings. And I was like, well, is there any part of you that feels any kind of insecurity and lack and fear? She's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I do. So we talked about that for a little bit. And I was like, so I want you to notice that when I asked you what you were feeling, you told me how you thought. And also, there are all these other negative things that you weren't really being in touch with or that you knew about, but you went directly towards the positive ones. And also, I noticed some other things that we were talking about in the conversation. But really, I think I bring that up because I see often with people who are like, I have no idea why this keeps happening. I love myself. But because you're in your body and you've been doing this for so long, you've been repressing your emotions for so long, you've been repressing your truth for so long, you don't even know when you're gaslighting yourself. You don't even know when there are other levels of vulnerability that you can tap into and you don't really know how to get there. And even if you do know how to get there, you may feel some shame about it and you feel the need to correct it. You feel the need to, as soon as you say something negative, like, okay, well, yeah, I guess this does make me feel kind of bad, but I know that it has nothing to do with me, or I know it's because of trauma. Like, you're so quick to try to clean it up because you have discomfort with being in your emotions and being in touch with that because you feel like that means something about you. And also, you don't really know what to do with it other than fix it because someone has always told you that you are a problem that needs to be fixed. And y'all, when I tell you this stuff is so reflexive that you don't catch it until it's done, and then you don't even see where the switch came on, so that you're just left with the consequences of it, and then you feel like a bad person. This is all the reason why we need a community. We need a tribe. We need helpers outside of us to see what we cannot see. Otherwise, we stay stuck in these cycles over and over and over and over again to the place where we either just say, okay, that's it, I give up. I'm not even going to focus on this anymore. I'm just going to focus on myself, whatever that means, because these problems are a part of yourself. They are absolutely affecting your mental and physical and emotional and spiritual sense of self. It's affecting your self-esteem. Also, again, repression doesn't push it away. So you work on yourself again, whatever that means, forever long. And then you have to come back to this relationship work. And so you feel like you're starting the process all over again, or a lot of people just feel frozen in fear and feel stuck. And so I don't want y'all to feel that way. I don't want y'all to feel that way. So I would love to work with you in our recovery school. It is our coaching program where we teach you all these skills. We get to the roots. We break it down for you. We help you work through what is the roadblock. We teach you how to talk to yourself instead. We teach you these are the things to look for in relationships. This is what a healthy friendship looks like. This is what a healthy relationship. This is what it looks like to create a dating plan if you're someone who's single. This is what it looks like to communicate with your partner. And we build it all together. And it comes with our peer community support group that you can join. So you can join by going to therecoveryschool.com, which will redirect you to the enrollment page. And you can read more about the program, what it includes, what it entails. Or you can go to our main website, blackgirlsheal.org, and go there. You're able to get started immediately. So would love to have you, would love to welcome you in, and you keep lifetime access to the course so that you can keep referring to the skills, the support, the community as needed. All right, that's it. I love you all so much. I look forward to welcoming in our new recovery school students. And for everyone else, I look forward to seeing you next week in next week's episode. So that's it for now. As always, take care of yourselves.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.